Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is a Bloomberg Daybreak for Thursday, February 21st, 2019. Coming up this hour,
the U.S. and China inch closer to a formal trade deal.
Possible auto tariffs loom large in talks between Europe and the White House.
There's evidence a Brexit agreement could be within reach.
And both bears and bulls find something to like in the latest Fed minutes.
House Democrats will file a resolution against President Trump's border emergency, plus a Coast Guard officer is accused of plotting to kill liberal leaders. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm Rob Bushka. Coming up in sports, a possible Stanley Cup preview goes south for the Islanders and a major shakeup in college basketball.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Karen Moscow.
And I'm Nathan Hager. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by SEI. Asset managers can exceed new thresholds for data management, reporting, and responsiveness. Transform your business with SEI's global operating platform at seic.com/IMS.
And we're seeing a mixed picture for stocks this morning, 5:01 on Wall Street. And we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are up 2.5 points, Dow futures up 30, NASDAQ futures up 13, the DAX in Germany is up 0.2%, CAC in Paris is little change, down less than 0.1%, and the FTSE 100 is down about 0.7%. Nikkei 225 in Japan gained almost 0.2%, while the Hang Seng in Hong Kong was up 0.4%. 10-year Treasury down 4/32, yield 2.65%, yield on the 2-year 2.50%. NYMEX crude oil little changed, up 3 cents to $57.19 a barrel. COMEX gold down 0.9% or $12.10 to $13.35.80 an ounce. The euro $1.1325. The yen 110.71. Nathan,
Karen, we begin on with the latest on trade talks between the U.S. and China. There does appear to be progress, as Bloomberg News has learned Beijing is considering lifting hefty tariffs on U.S. grain. Bloomberg Daybreak Asia anchor Brian Curtis reports from Hong Kong.
Nathan, Karen, Chinese and U.S. negotiators are said to be working on multiple memorandums of understanding as part of a trade deal. And a big part of that is China buying more U.S. goods. Back in 2017, China slapped anti-dumping tariffs on a U.S. grain that's used in animal feed. Sources say officials are now considering removing or reducing these duties. If done, it would allow China to resume some very big purchases. The trade was once worth $2 billion before falling to almost zero. And no word yet on any progress in the structural changes the U.S. is asking for. In Hong Kong, I'm Brian Curtis, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Brian, thank you. We're also learning that trade negotiators are working on multiple memorandums of understanding to form the basis of a final deal. Sources tell Bloomberg the agreements would cover a variety of areas, including technology transfer and intellectual property. Despite the progress, global stocks are seeing few gains. Steve Bryce is chief investment strategist at Standard Chartered Private Bank.
We've already seen a pretty good risk-on environment so far this year, and so we may be a little overstretched. So maybe this might be a little of buy the rumor and short-term sell the fat before global markets form a base again to go to even higher levels.
Stocks in Asia saw little movement today. European equities are mixed and U.S. futures are pointing to modest gains.
Well, meanwhile, the prospect of U.S. tariffs on auto imports still looms. Tensions between the Trump administration and European officials are high.
We're trying to make a deal. They're very tough to make a deal with, the EU. They've been very difficult over a period of time, over many, many years.
President Trump met with the Chancellor of Austria yesterday, who describes his meeting with the president as contentious, telling Austrian media he believes the president, quote, has it in for Germany. The Chancellor says the two argued over trade and energy policy, and their positions, he says, are very far apart.
The Federal Reserve also in focus this morning after yesterday's minutes showed policymakers still favor interest rate hikes this year. Both bears and bulls are finding something to like in the minutes. Ian Steely is Chief Investment Officer for Fixed Income at J.P. Morgan Asset Management.
I think you're still looking at a Fed that's acknowledging that the U.S. economy is doing pretty well. Good job growth, good wage growth coming through. And I think they have to acknowledge that if that continues, then maybe later this year they will have to reassess and see whether rates need to be moved higher.
Still, Fed officials appear divided on exactly what it would take for them to raise rates again. Vanguard Group Chief Economist Joe Davis.
I think what was helpful was the Fed acknowledging the global slowdown, the rise in policy uncertainty, and I think most importantly, that inflation is still going to struggle to have any more upward thrust.
The minutes also show the Fed plans to end its balance sheet runoff by the end of the year.
All right, turning to Brexit now, there appears to finally be some sense of urgency in talks between the UK and EU, with evidence an agreement could be within reach. Bloomberg's Ewan Potts joins us live from London with the latest. Good morning, Ewan.
Good morning, Nathan and Karen. With just over 5 weeks until the UK leaves the European Union, senior British ministers are in Brussels again today. They're seeking changes to the Brexit deal in an effort to make it acceptable to the UK Parliament. Both sides described yesterday's meeting between Theresa May and EU President Jean-Claude Juncker as constructive, and in a sign of rising optimism in the UK team, two senior ministers privately predicted that a deal would be reached within days, with a potential vote in the British Parliament next week. Live in London, I'm Ewan Potts, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Ewan, thank you. Meanwhile, Fitch Ratings is issuing the UK a formal downgrade warning. Fitch says a no-deal Brexit or a new relationship with the EU that undermines Britain's economy may result in a downgrade from the UK's current AA rating. We're getting PMI data out of Europe showing the euro area's private sector barely expanded in February. A composite purchasing managers index rose to 51.4, indicating a slight pickup in the pace of expansion, but growth was driven exclusively by services. Manufacturing PMI for the euro area shows contraction with a reading of 49.2 for February.
All right, we're getting earnings from Barclays this morning. The results are strong. Bloomberg's John Tucker joins us live with details. John.
Yeah, Nate, among the highlights, fourth quarter results, it's capital buffers for Barclays. They were higher than expected, giving the bank room to give back to shareholders. Barclays did say dividends will be progressive, supplemented by buybacks as and when appropriate. The comparisons this quarter were easier for the bank. Revenue was 2% ahead of estimates, with investment banking revenue in line and continuing to outperform its peers. Shares of Barclays up 3% in London. John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
John, thank you. S&P futures are up 3 points this morning. Dow futures up 40. NASDAQ futures up 17. Straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. And this is Bloomberg.
Thanks, Karen. It's 5:07 on Wall Street. Michael Barr is here with more of what's going on around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. House Democrats say they will make their move on the Trump emergency declaration this week, and it's coming in the form of a resolution. Bloomberg's Ed Baxter has the story.
The announced timing is Friday. The resolution is seeking to block the declaration with 92 co-sponsors. It is likely to pass the House and may get enough across-the-aisle votes to pass the Senate. But the president has vowed to veto any move to strike down his own emergency declaration. Meanwhile, a suit by 16 states has been filed. The draft wording on the House resolution says the February 15th declaration is hereby terminated. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
President Trump said Kim Jong-un must do something meaningful to escape U.S. sanctions on his country in comments ahead of the president's second summit with the North Korean leader. The president will travel to Hanoi to meet with Kim next week and discuss further steps toward Pyongyang giving up its nuclear arsenal.
We've made a lot of progress. We've made a tremendous amount. That doesn't mean this is going to be the last meeting, because I don't believe it will. But we have subjects to discuss which will be very fruitful, I believe.
CNN is reporting that Attorney General Bill Barr is preparing to announce as early as next week the completion of Special Counsel Robert Mueller's Russia investigation. Congressman Ted Lieu says the full report needs to be released at least to Congress.
To have just a mere summary is completely not acceptable, especially if the Department of Justice takes a position that we can't indict a sitting president, therefore Congress is the only arm that can hold him accountable. Well, we need to know all the facts and information, so they can't just not give us the information.
The scope and contours of what Barr will send to Congress remain unclear. A Coast Guard lieutenant living in a Washington suburb is accused of stockpiling weapons and plotting to kill prominent Democratic politicians, including several presidential candidates, as well as television news personalities. Christopher Paul Hassan, who worked at the Coast Guard headquarters in Washington, was arrested on firearms and narcotics charges last week. Prosecutors say, though, in a motion, those are the proverbial tip of the iceberg
calling Hassan a domestic terrorist bent on committing acts dangerous to human life. Global News 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Thank you, Michael. 5:09 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. Here's Rob Bushka.
Good morning, Nathan. The Islanders got a taste of playoff hockey, taking on a team just as talented in Calgary. As the Flames doubled up the Isles 4-2 out west, thanks in part to a pair of goals just 29 seconds apart. New York still atop the Metro Division with a three-point lead over the defending Cup champion Washington Capitals. Multiple upsets in college basketball's top 25 as number one Duke was pounded at home 88-72 by eighth-ranked North Carolina, who took advantage of the probable top draft pick Zion Williamson leaving the game with a knee sprain early in the first half. Duke coach Mike Krzyzewski on Williamson's injury.
Mild knee sprain. The knee is stable. We don't know how long he'll be out. It puts everyone in a state of, you know, trying to figure it out. Playing an outstanding team. That's not a good situation.
Luke May led the Tar Heels with 30 points and 15 rebounds. Number 6 Nevada tripped up at San Diego State. 13th-ranked LSU lost at home to Florida in overtime. Georgetown hands number 17 Villanova its second straight loss. And 18th-ranked Louisville fell by 20 at Syracuse. In the NBA, the Nets back at it tonight, hosting Portland. In baseball, Yankees reliever Zach Britton happy to be in camp, and he's impressed with the back end of the bullpen.
I'm coming in a bullpen with guys that strike out a ton of guys, and that's never been my thing. I'll strike out, you know, my fair share, but I'm not going to strike out 100 guys like Chad. And Ottavino and Betances. So I think trying to just continue to be myself, and for everybody down there, I think if we do that and we stay within ourselves, we're going to have a really, really good bullpen.
The Southpaw's coming off a torn Achilles tendon 14 months ago. He did go 1-0 last season. And that's your NBC Bloomberg Sports Update. Nathan?
And Rob, another note on that Duke-North Carolina game you just mentioned. Nike became a social media target last night when Duke star Zion Williams had one of his shoes split during the game. That's what forced him to leave with that knee sprain. Twitter lit up with jeers at the number one sports brand, pushing the keyword Zion to the top of the worldwide trending list last night. Nike shares, by the way, are down more than 1% in early trading. Futures on Wall Street pointed higher. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. And it's coming up on 5:12 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by National Realty, NRIA, developers of high-return income-producing properties. For investor partners, see them at NRIA.net.
Global News, 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. European stocks are edging lower this morning while U.S. stock index futures pair again amid a mixed bag of headlines on global trade. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up 3 points right now. Dow futures up 32. NASDAQ futures up 15. The DAX in Germany is little changed. 10-year Treasury down 4/32, yield 2.66%. Yield on the 2-year, 2.50%. NYMEX crude oil is little changed at $57.15 a barrel. COMEX gold is down about 0.8% on $11.40 to $13.36.50 an ounce. The euro, $1.13.34. The yen, 110.73. Stocks in Asia rose at the start of today's session, but paired gains after a major port in China reportedly banned coal imports from Australia. Bloomberg's Juliet Sally reports from Singapore.
Karen, the Australian share market had closed higher by 0.7% in Sydney before news came through that China's Dalian port will ban coal imports from the country indefinitely. But the Aussie plunged on the Reuters report after earlier fluctuating in the wake of mixed economic data. Elsewhere, Chinese stocks gave back earlier gains and the yuan edged down from July highs amid reports the PBOC is not willing to cut its benchmark interest rate. But news the US and China have reached multiple memorandums of understanding in relation to their trade dispute did help sentiment. The Nikkei added 0.2% in Tokyo to 21,464 points. Chinese stocks listed in Hong Kong along with markets in Taiwan and India also gaining. In Singapore, I'm Juliet Sal. Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Julia, thank you. And a busy morning for economic data. It starts with a weekly report on initial jobless claims and durable goods orders, both out at 8:30 Wall Street time. And more than a a dozen companies in the S&P 500 are scheduled to report earnings today. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Karen. Democrats in the House plan to file a resolution tomorrow seeking to block President Trump's emergency declaration to build a wall on the U.S.-Mexico border. If it passes the House and the GOP-led Senate, President Trump has vowed to veto it. According to authorities, court documents indicate that Coast Guard Lieutenant Christopher Paul Hassan was planning attacks targeting prominent Democrats and media figures. In the NHL, the Islanders lost. The Bruins won in a shootout against the Golden Knights. NBA action resumes tonight. Post-All-Star break, the Nets host the Trailblazers. The Warriors host the Kings. And the first spring training game of the MLB season kicks off today with the A's hosting the Mariners. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Signs of spring abound. Thank you, Michael. It is 5:20 on Wall Street. Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak. Donald Rissmiller joins us this morning. He's chief economist at Strategis Research Partners. Donald, I'm curious to get your take on the Fed minutes. After parsing through the document, how long do you see patience lasting?
Yeah, that's a great question, and it was a nuanced set of minutes, I thought, because they mentioned some of the things we were looking for. They said that they're watching some of the weakness in inflation, that they're paying attention to what was the government shutdown, where fiscal policy could go, but they didn't really commit to being patient indefinitely. We said if some of these things that have to go right do go right, and the economy starts to grow again, there is room to still be in a rate hike cycle. So what I would take away is if they can get some things to go right, they could still see interest rates rising. But it's a couple quarters here before I think they'd be comfortable doing that.
So you're still holding out the prospect of, what, at least one rate hike before year's end?
Yeah, I don't know that you're going to get more than one. I think that'd be tough given the long list of things that has to go right. But the idea that the rate hike cycle is completely over, I think, might be a bit premature here.
Why do you think we haven't seen demonstrable inflation pressure in this cycle?
Well, if we look at what is pushing up inflation, there could be a couple different variables. One could be inflation expectations, and that's not happening. Inflation expectations are still pretty well anchored. There isn't a lot of push on the supply side either. If we look at commodities over the past few months, they've come down in a number of cases, like oil, as an example. So you're not getting the expectations moving. You're not getting the supply side of the equation moving. The only thing really pushing up inflation is some of the demand picture variables. That's the output gap or the low unemployment rate. So you only have one of the three components there that's pushing inflation up. And you're getting a little bit, but you're not getting a lot.
So what do you think is going to be the main catalyst for the Fed to make a move on rates? Is it going to be trade tensions? Is it going to be continuing global growth slowdown possibility? What?
Well, I think you have to get some of those things to go right. But what they're really watching for is some ability to say, yes, inflation is moving up. So if you had core inflation moving above 2%, maybe 2.25%, then they could start to say, okay, that happened because some of these things resolved themselves, whether it was trade tensions or global concerns. But really, I think it's going to come back to some of the domestic variables. Also, financial conditions would have to be well-behaved, which I think would happen in that environment.
How much of a factor is market volatility for the Fed at this point?
So I think if we look at stock market volatility, that's interesting, but bond market volatility might be even more important if we look at how spreads have evolved, how other curves have evolved. I think that's really where we want to pay attention. So market volatility does matter because it's the tightening of financial conditions, but it's really that tightening of financial conditions and how it applies to forecasts for economic growth that matters most.
Our next catalyst, I suppose, the European Central Bank releases its minutes today. What are your expectations there, particularly with the, you know, so many signs of slowdown in the Eurozone?
Yeah, so I am recently returned from a trip to Europe, and things are not great, yeah. I guess is what I'd report back. So there was an expectation you could see some normalization over the course of 2019 in that. I don't think so. I mean, I think they're going to also have to be on hold here for quite a while, waiting and seeing.
All right, we'll put this conversation on hold for now. Thank you so much for these insights. Really appreciate it. That's Donald Rissmiller. He is chief economist at Strategis Research Partners. And the European Central Bank is next to release the minutes from its latest policy meeting. That's coming out later today. Ahead of that, taking a forward look at the markets. Not a whole lot of movement, but it's on the upside for equity futures, with S&P futures up 2.5 points right now. Dow futures ahead by 31, NASDAQ futures up about 14 points. The price of the 10-year Treasury down 4/32, the yield at 2.65%, and the 2-year is at 2.50, nearly 2.51%. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. And Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by Withum, a forward-thinking, technology-driven advisory and accounting firm helping clients be in a position of strength in today's modern business landscape. Visit Withum.com to learn more.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130 to Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 991 to Boston. Bloomberg 1061 to San Francisco. Bloomberg 960 to the country. Sirius XM Channel 119 and around the globe. The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We are just about 4 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. We have progress on U.S.-China trade talks. Bloomberg News has learned negotiators are working on multiple memorandums of understanding to form the basis of a final trade deal. Bloomberg's Christine Burke has details.
These MOUs under consideration would cover agriculture, services, technology transfers, and intellectual property. Now, it does need to be said that a breakthrough is not expected during this week's talks, but it does seem like a rather positive sign. Could go a long way in forming the basis of a final trade deal between the U.S. and China.
And sources tell Bloomberg negotiators also plan to discuss lifting hefty Chinese tariffs on U.S. grain.
Now, on the Brexit front, there's evidence emerging a new deal could be within reach there. Bloomberg's Alex Morales reports from London.
Theresa May is racing to find a way out of the Brexit impasse amid mounting evidence that an agreement is within reach. Brexit Secretary Steve Barclay and Attorney General Geoffrey Cox are due in Brussels on Thursday with proposed changes the UK is seeking to the divorce deal to make it acceptable to the House of Commons. May herself met with European Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker on Wednesday, and they said they'd meet again before the month is up. In London, Alex Morales, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thanks, Alex. In economic news, the UK posted a record budget surplus last month in the wake of a threatened credit rating downgrade by Fitch over Brexit.
Europe's private sector barely expanded in February amid a slump in manufacturing. Manufacturing PMI for the euro area came in at 49.2.
Shares of Barclays are up more than 3%. CEO Jess Staley is promising more buybacks and dividends to shareholders as the bank's traders outperform most of their Wall Street and European peers.
Shares of Maersk are down about 10%. The world's largest shipping line says it expects to earn less money in 2019 than analysts predicted.
Here in the U.S., Kraft Heinz, Hormel Foods, and Hewlett-Packard Enterprise lead 14 companies in the S&P 500 reporting earnings today. Now let's get you up to date on how stocks are faring. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. Right now, futures are little change to higher. S&P futures up a point. Dow futures up 20. NASDAQ futures up 10. The DAX in Germany also little changed, up less than a tenth of a percent. 10-year Treasury down 4/32, yield 2.65%. The yield on the 2-year, 2.50%. NYMEX crude oil up a tenth of a percent, up 6 cents to $57.23 a barrel. COMEX gold is down 8-tenths percent, down $10.30 to $1,337.60. Cents an ounce. And straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. And this is Bloomberg.
Karen, thanks. It's 5:33 on Wall Street, and Michael Barr has more of what's going on around the world. Michael?
Thank you very much, Nathan. House Democrats plan to file a resolution tomorrow that would block President Trump's emergency declaration to divert money to his border wall. It's likely to pass the House and may get enough Republican support for Senate approval. Bloomberg's Bob Moon reports.
The president has been insistent this week.
I have an absolute right to call national security. We need strong borders.
But not if Congress votes to overrule him. The draft of the House resolution being circulated would state the national emergency declared by Trump on February 15th is hereby terminated. If the House were to pass it, the Senate would be required to take it up within 18 days, creating a difficult choice for Republicans who control that chamber, 53-47. Trump has vowed to veto the measure if it reaches his desk. Overriding that could prove insurmountable, since each chamber would need a two-thirds majority. Bob Moon, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Attorney General Bill Barr is said to be preparing to announce as early as next week the completion of Special Counsel Robert Mueller's Russia investigation. That's according to CNN. Democratic Congressman Ted Lieu.
I think if it's classified, I can see why that should not be shared. But I don't see what the principle is that you give Congress information that is potentially alarming, and then we can't share that with American people. I don't think that would be tenable.
It's also reportedly unclear how long it will take justice officials to prepare what will be submitted to lawmakers. President Trump expressed some optimism about his upcoming meeting with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, saying he and Kim have a very good relationship. President Trump also talked about recent claims from former acting FBI Director Andrew McCabe. He called McCabe a complete disaster.
Well, I think Andrew McCabe has made a fool out of himself over the last couple of days, and he really looks to me like sort of a poor man's J. Edgar Hoover.
The president made his comments during a joint press conference with Austria's chancellor at the White House. Federal prosecutors say a Coast Guard lieutenant living in a Washington suburb plotted to kill prominent Democratic politicians, including several presidential candidates, as well as TV news personalities. Christopher Paul Hassan was arrested on firearms and narcotics charges. Senator Marco Rubio says Venezuelan troops have begun disobeying orders from Nicolas Maduro's top officers and are unlikely to heed calls to crack down on a humanitarian aid caravan scheduled to enter the country this weekend. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Michael, thank you. 5:35 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. Here's Rob Buschka.
Good morning, Nathan. The Islanders had their win streak snapped in Calgary 4-2. A close game turned ugly in the third as the Flames scored twice inside 30 seconds. A disappointed Anders Lee.
Hard hockey game, I guess, in the third. That stuff happens. The rest of the way, this kind of stuff's going to be more and more like playoff hockey, and that's what you expect. And we had an opportunity on the power play too at the end, so...
The Isles are still atop the Metro by 3 points ahead of Alex Ovechkin and the Capitals. All three local teams skate tonight. Rangers host the Wild while the Devils put up the Senators. The Isles drop the puck in Edmonton at 9 o'clock. A major shakeup in college basketball as the NBA's on All-Star break for another 24 hours, so the stars of tomorrow were on display, mainly in the ACC.
Final horn arrives, and North Carolina stuns number one Duke. A wire-to-wire victory for the Tar Heels, who send a statement to all the land, winning at Cameron Indoor for the first time since 2016.
Westwood won on the call, 88-72. Number one Duke falls at Cameron Indoor Arena to rival 8th-ranked North Carolina. Luke May led the Tar Heels with 30 points and 15 boards. Bigger story was in the opening moments. Duke star freshman Zion Williamson slipped and sprained his knee. He's day-to-day. Duke just one of five ranked teams to fall on Wednesday. Nevada, LSU, Villanova, and Louisville were all upset. Just like the fans were in Athens. Tough loss for Georgia. They were tied with Mississippi State with a second to play. A fan threw a stuffed animal on the court. MSU converted a technical free throw to win by one. Tonight in the association, the Nets host Portland to kick off the second half of the season. And that's your NBC Bloomberg Sports Update. Nathan?
Okay, Rob, thank you. It's 5:37 on Wall Street. The latest edition of Bloomberg Business Week is on newsstands now. It's a special double issue focused on real estate, including how exclusive brands are redefining luxury living. Max Chafkin contributed to that story for Bloomberg Business Week.
This is part of a kind of weird and amusing and maybe compelling trend in real estate. Brands that are not necessarily real estate brands lapping their names on high-end real estate and getting, you know, huge premiums, about 30% of a premium on what you'd otherwise get if it wasn't, for instance, the Armani apartments.
All right, you can read more about this and other stories in this week's edition of Bloomberg Business Week. Know what matters and why. Visit businessweek.com or pick up a copy of the magazine on newsstands now and listen to Business Week with Carol Masser and Jason Kelly weekdays at 2 p.m. Wall Street time on Bloomberg Radio. 5:38 on Wall Street. Time for the Tri-State Business Report, brought to you by Virgin Atlantic. Over 300 hours of onboard entertainment, flatbeds for napping and afternoon tea, daily nonstop flights to the UK in partnership with Delta Airlines. Let's check in with Bloomberg's John Metaxas.
Good morning, Nathan. New York City has reached a proposed $5.3 million settlement with FEMA over allegedly fraudulent Superstorm Sandy claims. The federal government had accused the city of receiving millions in FEMA payments for damage to Department of Transportation vehicles that predated Superstorm Sandy. The settlement would end allegations that the city violated the federal False Claims Act. Connecticut would be the first state in the country to implement a tax on sugary drinks under a provision in Governor Ned Lamont's budget proposal. Facing a $3.7 billion deficit over the next 2 years, Lamont has proposed a budget containing several sin taxes. They include a 1.5 cent per ounce tax on sugar-sweetened beverages, as well as a 10-cent tax on plastic bags, and a 75% tax on electronic cigarettes. And New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy and state lawmakers are a step closer to hammering out an agreement on legalization of recreational marijuana. Democratic State Senator Nicholas Scutari, who's the point person in the legislature, says leaders have agreed on a $42 per ounce tax rate on recreational pot, along with a makeup of a 5-member commission to regulate the substance. With the Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report, I'm John Metaxas.
Thank you, John. It's 5:39 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Courtney Donahoe on WHAS in Louisville. Health spending will make up almost 20% of GDP by 2027.
I'm Patrice Sikora, and for WIOD in Miami, I'm reporting tobacco giants want the U.S. Supreme Court to review several decisions in favor of Florida smokers and deceased smokers' families.
I'm Marcus Carlson on Bloomberg DAB Digital Radio in London. We're following shares in Barclays as CEO Jess Staley promises more dividends and buybacks.
I'm Steve Potusk, and on KYW in Philadelphia, I'm talking about the Philly Fed Index of Regional Business Conditions.
I'm Gina Cervetti, and on WCCO in Minneapolis, we're watching for earnings from Hormel Foods.
Those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. And it's nearly 5:41 on Wall Street. Straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak, we check in with Bloomberg Opinion, our global platform that offers fast commentary and instant analysis of some of the stories, this morning's top news. This is Bloomberg.
Global news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. European stocks edging lower while U.S. stock index futures pair again amid a mixed bag of headlines on global trade. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. Right now, S&P futures are up about a point. Dow futures up 20. NASDAQ futures up 11. The DAX in Germany is up about 0.2% now, while the FTSE 100 is lower, down 0.7%. 10-year Treasury down 4/32, yield 2.65%. Yield on the 2-year, 2.50%. NYMEX crude oil up about 0.2% or 9 cents to $57.25 a barrel. COMEX gold down 0.7%, down $10 to $13.37.90 an ounce. The euro, $1.1339, and the yen, 110.69. We get earnings from 14 companies in the S&P 500 today, including Kraft Heinz. And here with a preview is Bloomberg's Charlie Pellett.
Analysts at Bloomberg Intelligence say earnings may advance 6% from the year-ago period as the benefits of a modest uptick in net sales and a lower effective tax rate outweigh the effect of a narrower operating margin. Changing consumer tastes have been hard on the company and its competitors in the packaged food industry. The Kraft Heinz portfolio of traditional brands includes Oscar Mayer, Maxwell House, and Capri Sun. Charlie Pellett, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Charlie, thank you. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. And now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, Democrats in the House plan to file a resolution tomorrow seeking to block President Donald Trump's emergency declaration to build a wall on the southern U.S. border. A devastating fire has raced through densely packed buildings in a shopping district in Bangladesh's capital. At least 70 people died, and DACA authorities say many of them were trapped and burned beyond recognition. Federal prosecutors say a U.S. Coast Guard Lieutenant Christopher Paul Hassan was planning attacks on prominent liberal politicians and TV personalities, including House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Senate Minority Leader Charles Schumer. In the NHL, the Islanders lost, the Bruins won in a shootout against the Golden Knights. NBA action resumes tonight with the Nets hosting the Trailblazers, the Warriors host the Kings. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, Michael, thank you. We're live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studios, where it's 5:49 on Wall Street. Time to check in with Bloomberg Opinion, our platform offering informed perspectives on a range of global topics and expert data-driven commentary on breaking news. Bloomberg Opinion editor Jennifer Ryan is with me now from our London Bureau. And with Barclays earnings out this morning, Jen, Lionel Laurent writes that Jess Staley is trying to outrun an economic slowdown. CEO says his bank's shares are too cheap. What's Laurent think about that?
I mean, sure, compared with struggling rivals like Deutsche Bank, Barclays is clearly doing a better job of generating returns that are acceptable to shareholders. So that and the promise of buybacks was more than enough to push Barclays shares up above 4%, you know, at one point in early trading today. And, you know, the news today, there is definitely some good things to look at in today's report. For example, full year return on equity was 8.5%. That's really getting quite close to the goal of 9%. And in addition, costs are falling and the promise of more cuts and the buybacks are a decent sign of confidence.
So what's the hitch?
Well, you've got the investment bank focused on more lucrative business like leverage loans, and you've got the consumer business ramping up lending. So in theory, all you need to do is keep a lid on costs and then the profitability will follow. But look, the point is the economic cycle may not be too kind to this strategy. In Britain, you've got impairment charges rising. And at the investment bank, which is a key target for activist Edward Bramson, the story is really still one of managed decline.
And of course, when you're talking about Britain, you haven't even mentioned Brexit.
I know. And, you know, let me do so now, because the bank is, of course, preparing for it. It set aside £150 million to cover the risk. And this is certainly a reasonable cushion. It's preparing for the worst case outcome. But you just can't set aside the fact that if you get a serious dislocation because of Brexit, there's going to be an impact on UK interest rates that could affect Barclays' profitability. And a Brexit-induced recession can't be ignored. So with Brexit looming, you've got an activist circling. Staley is walking a pretty fine line between confidence and bravado.
All right. And as we await the minutes from the European Central Bank's latest meeting, Marcus Ashworth has a look this morning at the European junk bond market. High yield sales are a shadow of what they were this time last year. What happened?
Sales are down about 60% from the same time last year, and it's an incredibly different story from the United States, where the pace is about the same. So we've got a tale of two bond markets here in Europe. On the one hand, if you're investment grade, investors are flocking to you. Issuance is up 45% for sovereigns, more than 50% for investment grade corporate bonds.
So why is investment grade so great and junk so rough in Europe?
Well, what accounts for the newfound love of fixed income? You've got the Fed turning more dovish. You've got euro area economies sort of stuttering, and a relatively easier political environment. A classic example here is Italy. At the end of last year, it could barely issue long-dated debt, and now it's fighting off buyers for a 30-year security. All of this enthusiasm is just not trickling through to the high-yield market, and there looks to be significant skepticism on the outlook for riskier issuers. I mean, some euro-area economies are just hitting a brick wall, and there's the prospect of a recession in manufacturing.
But how is this the ECB's fault?
Well, it's partly its fault because it's becoming more and more evident that the decision to end quantitative easing was premature. Ashworth points out that the central bank chose to curtail its bond purchases at the end of last year. And when it had done that, spreads had been driven quite a bit tighter by all its purchasing. The elimination of bond purchases then caused all that benefit to unravel. And so now spreads are almost right back where they were before the corporate sector purchase program started. So now what can the ECB do about it? There's not much hope that any near-term change to policy will help. But so now let's look ahead at the next policy meeting coming at the beginning of March. Could they reconsider restarting quantitative easing? I mean, Ashworth says that would be absolute madness. But extending it to include high-yield debt would also be completely just unthinkable. However, the ECB may have little choice but to start thinking of some alternatives.
Bloomberg Opinion editor Jennifer Ryan, thanks as always. You can read more of these and other stories from Bloomberg Opinion at Bloomberg.com/opinion. On the Bloomberg terminal, just type in OPIN Go. Karen.
All right, Nathan, thank you. It is 5:53 on Wall Street. It's time for the Bloomberg Law Report. Let's get to the legal stories we're watching this morning with Steve Podisk in the Bloomberg 99.1 Washington Newsroom.
New York City reached a proposed $5.3 million settlement to end claims that it violated the False Claims Act by improperly seeking and receiving FEMA payments for vehicle damage that predated Superstorm Sandy. Connecticut would be the first in the country to implement a statewide tax on sugary drinks under a provision in Governor Ned Lamont's budget proposal. And Facebook wants the Patent and Trademark Office to kill a BlackBerry patent for a process behind silencing incoming messages on mobile devices.
Bloomberg Law. Everything you need, all on one legal research platform, including guidance, analysis, and Bloomberg Market Intelligence. Find out more at BloombergLaw.com.
All right, Steve, thank you. Now, in other legal news, UBS has been ordered to pay a record $5.1 billion after a Paris court found the bank guilty of helping wealthy French clients illegally launder money. For more on this story, Bloomberg's June Grosso speaks to Wayne State University law professor Peter Henning.
Peter, some of the allegations seem pretty outrageous. For example, that UBS bankers help launder funds by returning to France with wads of cash for clients with undeclared Swiss accounts. Tell us more about the case.
UBS, back when it settled with the United States back in 2009, said we're out of the business of hiding accounts, and apparently they're not. And so, you know, that's one of the more salacious aspects of this, that, you know, they were willing to trade cash. But that's not really anything new when you're trying to hide money from the tax collector, that you have to stay off of the grid. You're not going to send a bank wire. You're going to deal in cash coming and going. And so what this does show is that maybe UBS has not really reformed itself all that much and is still willing to help hide assets and keep them away from the tax collector.
The fine here was more than twice as much as the heaviest fine imposed by U.S., British, and Swiss regulators against Swiss banks. It's about five times the amount expected in estimates. Is the court sending a message in the French crackdown on tax fraud?
Oh, I certainly think that's what's going on here. That now, it's not just France, but also Germany and other European countries are tired of seeing assets shifted over into Switzerland and hidden. And so I think the real goal here by the French court was to send a message that if you take this case to trial and we find a violation, you're really going to pay. And that may send a message to other Swiss banks that come in and settle, make a payment, and put this behind you and get it over with.
And as Wayne State University law professor Peter Henning speaking with Bloomberg's June Grosso, you can listen to more legal analysis like this on Bloomberg Politics, Policy, Power, and Law weekdays at 12 p.m. Wall Street time here on Bloomberg Radio, and find more legal news at BloombergLaw.com. Attorneys will find exceptional legal research and business development tools there as well. Visit BloombergLaw.com for more information. And futures this morning are higher. S&P futures is up 2.5 points, Dow futures up 30, NASDAQ futures up 15, the DAX in Germany is up 0.25%, 10-year Treasury down 4/32, yield 2.65%, and the yield on the 2-year 2.50%, the 30-year yield is at 3%. And Bloomberg Daybreak continues. This is Bloomberg.